Welcome to Washington Today on C-SPAN Radio for Friday, January 15th, 2021. Here are some of your headlines. Security in the newly designated Green Zone in downtown Washington, D.C. tightens with just 5 days until the presidential inauguration. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi launching a review of Capitol security infrastructure, interagency processes, and command and control after the deadly attack on the Capitol January 6th. That review led by retired Lieutenant General Russell Honoré, best remembered as the commander of the response following Hurricane Katrina in 2005. Speaker Pelosi also suggesting lawmakers found to have assisted in the attack on the Capitol may be charged criminally. And President-elect Joe Biden selecting former FDA Commissioner David Kessler to be his chief scientific advisor in the coronavirus response. President-elect Biden last night unveiling a $1.9 trillion pandemic relief plan that includes $400 billion for directly combating the virus. This from CNN, domestic extremists pose the most likely threat to the presidential inauguration, particularly those who believe the incoming administration is illegitimate. According to a joint bulletin from the Department of Homeland Security, FBI, and eight other agencies obtained by CNN. The assessment dated January 14th also notes that since the attack on the U.S. Capitol, Russian, Iranian, and Chinese influence actors have seized the opportunity to amplify narratives in furtherance of their policy interest amid the presidential transition, adding that there's a lack of specific, credible information indicating that they are seeking to commit violence. That all from CNN. There was a news conference at the Washington, D.C. Convention Center today, which included Matt Miller, special agent in charge, Washington Field Office, U.S. Secret Service. The Secret Service is leading the security effort for the inauguration.
For well over a year, we have been working with our federal, state, and municipal partners to develop and implement a comprehensive operational security plan to ensure the safety of everyone participating in the event, as well as those who may try to come to D.C. to watch the inauguration or spend time in the nation's capital. Anyone who's seen any of the mayor's recent press conferences or listened to her earlier statements will realize we are discouraging this in lieu of virtual participation, but we are prepared. We cannot allow a recurrence of the chaos and illegal activity that the United States and the world witnessed last week. Our democracy is built on the rule of law, and the Secret Service workforce is dedicated and committed to uphold its oath to the Constitution and assure that its vital, no-fail mission regarding the security of the presidential inauguration and the peaceful transfer of power is carried out. This year, of course, as everyone is aware, our country is battling the most significant health crisis to face the nation in more than a century, and the need to follow recommended public health guidance, combined with the increased measures resulting from last week's events, will undoubtedly impact the inauguration in almost every aspect. That said, our security plan was developed to respond to any contingency that might arise on and leading up to January 20th.
Matt Miller with the Secret Service. This morning, the Secret Service requesting the National Park Service to temporarily close the National Mall until January 21st, the day after the inauguration. Jeffrey Reinhold is National Mall and Memorial Parks Superintendent. He was also at today's news conference.
We did receive a letter from the U.S. Secret Service yesterday asking us to consider closing several areas within the National Mall. This is essentially the monumental core, the area around the White House and sections of Pennsylvania Avenue. I do want to thank the Secret Service, the U.S. Park Police, for working with us to understand what their concerns are, how we could help address this national security issue, to make sure that the icons that we administer are protected, and also to make sure that if possible, we could allow for First Amendment activities in the park. We are the premier First Amendment area in the country, in the world probably, and we wanted to see if it was possible to do that and also meet their security needs. So as of this morning, the Secretary of the Interior has officially closed the areas in the National Mall. That includes, again, the core area and the locations that the mayor mentioned before, in support of the request from the Secret Service and the U.S. Park Police. I do want to talk for just a second about the First Amendment areas. We were able to identify two locations. We had several groups that had submitted First Amendment applications, and we were able to identify two locations on Pennsylvania Avenue where up to 100 people will be able to gather. They will be met by U.S. Park Police, escorted through magnetometers, and then taken to these areas so that they can exercise their First Amendment rights. I do again want to thank the Park Police and the Secret Service for trying to find a way that we could accommodate that, but recognize that these are different times and require different measures.
Jeffrey Reinhold with the National Park Service. The very large security area in downtown Washington, with streets blocked by barricades, heavy police and National Guard presence, vehicles entering searched for weapons, threats, and explosives, is now being called by the Secret Service the Green Zone. And it recalls similar U.S. military fortified areas in Baghdad and Kabul, the capitals of Iraq and Afghanistan, true war zones. Washington, D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser was also at today's news conference and asked about how the city has changed so quickly.
People say the city kind of looks like a military takeover. There's armed troops, roadblocks, even just around the corner from where we are right now. What message, Mayor, are you sending?
I want to be very clear about this. As a person born and raised in this city, I have spent many days, I have spent a lot of time in and around our national monumental core, at these iconic structures, at the Capitol building, where there was an attempted coup. All of these things are so important, not just to America, but to the 712,000 people who call D.C. home. We traverse these roads and parks each and every day. The National Park is a park, and it is used not just for First Amendment demonstration, but for people to walk around the park, to get exercise, to play games, you name it. So we don't take any of the measures that we have taken lightly. Let me say something about your comment about a takeover. I have to remind D.C. residents that I asked the federal government to devise a deployment plan that would protect federal assets in the District of Columbia. And that is what has been done under the leadership of the United States Secret Service and the various agencies that have been mentioned. That is important, as you heard Chief Conte say, because our officers can also focus on keeping D.C. safe from any aspects of crime, including from these extremist groups that have attacked our Capitol.
Washington, D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser, news conference held in the Washington, D.C. Convention Center. She also said there could be bridge closures coming into Washington in the days leading up to the inauguration. Those conversations still ongoing. You heard the mayor refer to the attack on the U.S. Capitol January 6th, a new court filing by federal prosecutors against one of the rioters that day says the intention was, quote, to capture and assassinate elected officials. That's in the memo seeking to keep Jacob Anthony Chansley in detention. You might have seen the pictures of him in a headdress and face paint with a bullhorn, carrying a spear, rallying the protesters. The FBI gave an update on the cases against the rioters so far. Stephen D'Antuono is assistant director in charge of the FBI's Washington field office. He was on a conference call.
To date, we've identified more than 270 suspects involved in criminal activity in and around the Capitol. The FBI has arrested more than 40 subjects, and with the help of our partners around the country, more than 100 individuals have been taken into custody. We are methodically following all the leads to identify those responsible and hold them accountable. The American people have played a critical role in assisting us with these efforts. On behalf of the FBI and our law enforcement partners, I want to thank the American people for your incredible outpouring of tips to help us bring these perpetrators to justice. We are continuing to review them all. We ask that you keep them coming. In the past week alone, we've received nearly 140,000 photos and videos from the public. To those of you who took part in the violence, here's something you should know. Every FBI field office in the country is looking for you. As a matter of fact, even your friends and family are tipping us off. So you might want to consider turning yourself in instead of wondering when we're going to come knocking on your door, because we will. If you have tips, no matter how small, please contact 1-800, call FBI, or submit photos and videos to fbi.gov/USCapitol. That's Capitol with an O.
Stephen D'Antuono with the FBI's Washington field office. He was on a teleconference today, and the Justice Department explaining that the usual press conference room, now a security operations center, and that's why they had to do this virtually. Also today, inspectors general at the Departments of Justice, Homeland Security, Defense, and Interior say they're going to review their agency's response to the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol. This as some, including former Capitol Police Chief Stephen Sund, questioning why calls for National Guard assistance that day were held up. Up on Capitol Hill, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi announcing she is launching her own investigation.
I have asked retired Lieutenant General Russell Honoré to lead an immediate review of security infrastructure, interagency processes, and command and control. The general is a respected leader with experience dealing with crises. As a former Vice Director for Operations, J3, with the Joint Chiefs of Staff, his focus was military support to civilian authorities. And he has experience with the National Capital Region's security. House leadership has worked with General Honoré, seen up close and personal his excellent leadership at the time of Katrina. Particularly Mr. Clyburn was the head of our Katrina task force. So he and I and others know full well how fortunate we are that the general has accepted as willing to do this. Members are moving forward with strong oversight from committees, of course, to have after-action review. There is strong interest in the Congress in a 9/11-type commission, an outside commission, to conduct that after-action review. In the meantime, I'm very grateful to General Honoré for taking on this responsibility. I find this to be a very emotional time. I've said to the members, we're very passionate to our reaction to this assault on our democracy, on this temple to democracy. We're very passionate about our reaction, but we must be very dispassionate in how we make decisions to go forward for security, security, security.
House Speaker Nancy Pelosi at her weekly briefing on Capitol Hill. She was also asked about the concerns raised by about 30 Democratic House members who noticed an extremely high number of outside groups in the Capitol complex the day before the attack, January 5th, and that the rioters on January 6th seemed to have an unusually detailed knowledge of the layout of the complex. Suggestions that some House members, maybe Republicans, helped.
A number of House Democrats have signed a letter to Sergeant at Arms and Capitol Police asking about asking them to look into GOP members who may have brought tours through the Capitol on January 5th. What would you like to see done in that investigation? Is there a timeline or any action that may be taken towards members who did bring public groups into the Capitol before January 6th?
When we're talking about security, we have to talk about truth and trust. In order to serve here with each other, we must trust that people have respect for their oath of office, respect for this institution. We must trust each other, respecting the people who sent us here. We must also have the truth, and that will be looked into. If, in fact, it is found that members of Congress were accomplices to this insurrection, if they aided and abetted the crime, there may have to be actions taken beyond the Congress and in terms of prosecution for that.
House Speaker Nancy Pelosi. The House Minority Leader, Republican Kevin McCarthy, has called for a bipartisan commission to investigate the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol. Washington Today continues in a minute. Welcome back to Washington Today. A few more headlines, this from Fox News. Senate Judiciary Committee Chairman Lindsey Graham releasing a slew of additional documents and transcripts related to his panel's investigation into the origins and aftermath of the Trump-Russia probe, calling the original probe one of the most incompetent and corrupt investigations in the history of the FBI and DOJ. Russia today saying it will withdraw from the Open Skies Treaty with the U.S., That treaty has allowed observation flights over military facilities since 2002. President Trump withdrew the U.S. from the treaty last year, accusing the Russians of violations. Russia denies that. The U.S. military meeting its goal of reducing the number of troops in Afghanistan to about 2,500 by today, a drawdown that the Associated Press notes may have violated a last-minute congressional prohibition. And 22-year-old award-winning black female writer Amanda Gorman has been selected to read a poem at President-elect Joe Biden's inauguration next Wednesday, carrying on the tradition for Democratic presidents to have celebrated poets read an original poem at the inauguration ceremonies. Another terrible milestone in the coronavirus pandemic, worldwide deaths now topping 2 million, that according to Johns Hopkins University data. In the U.S., deaths over 388,000. President-elect Joe Biden tweeting today, "My administration will move heaven and earth to allow more people to get vaccinated, create more places for them to get vaccinated, mobilize more medical teams to get shots in arms, increase vaccine supply, and get it out the door as soon as possible." Today, President-elect Biden said that he was in Wilmington, Delaware. He said his often stated goal of 100 million vaccine doses administered in 100 days says it is achievable.
Some wonder if we're reaching too far for that goal. Is it achievable? It's a legitimate question to ask. Let me be clear. I'm convinced we can get it done. And this is a time to set big goals, to pursue them with courage and conviction, because the health of the nation is literally at stake. First, we will immediately work with states to open up vaccinations to more priority groups. The process of establishing priority groups is driven by science, but the problem is the implementation has been too rigid and confusing. If you were to ask most people today, they couldn't tell you who exactly is getting vaccinated. What they do know is there are tens of millions of doses of vaccine sitting unused in freezers around the country, while people who want and need the vaccine can't get it. We'll fix the problem by encouraging states to allow more people to get vaccinated beyond healthcare workers and move through those groups as quickly as they think we can. That includes anyone 65 years or older, a population that has accounted for over 80% of the deaths to date, 80% of the deaths to date. We also have to continue vaccinating frontline essential workers like educators, first responders, grocery store workers, et cetera. It won't mean that everyone in this group will get vaccinated immediately, as the supply is not where it needs to be. But it will mean that vaccines become available, as they can become available, will reach more people who need them, will reach out and get the vaccine used. The second thing we're going to change: if we're getting more people vaccinated, then we need more vaccination sites. That's where we're going to harness the full resources of the federal government to establish thousands of community vaccination centers. On my first day in office, I'll instruct the Federal Emergency Management Agency, FEMA, to begin setting up the first of these centers. By the end of our first month in office, we will have 100 federally supported centers across the nation that will ultimately vaccinate millions of people.
President-elect Joe Biden in Wilmington, Delaware. And joining us now with more on the new administration's coronavirus vaccine distribution plans is Sarah Overmall, healthcare reporter with Politico. Thanks for being with us. What does the Biden plan look like, and how might it be different than the Trump plan?
Well, it's going to be this really ambitious rollout to try and boost vaccination rates and specifically to target communities of color and underserved communities, because that's a real concern across the public health sphere that there's going to be people who are left out of these vaccination efforts, or it's harder for them to get these vaccines, so they'll be less inclined to. So that's the main focus. The way that he's doing that is, according to people we've spoken to who are familiar with the plan he's announcing, going to be looking at rolling these out in community health centers, so not just hospitals and pharmacies, which might limit the areas that they're in, but also max vaccination centers in places like stadiums, community churches, also potentially a $1 billion ad campaign to get people more confident in the vaccine, since that has been a really big concern. And then along with what he's going to be announcing with the plan, he's also going to be unveiling this sort of star-studded team of scientists, many of them former Obama or Clinton administration aides, who will be joining this effort, some people like David Kessler, former commissioner of the FDA. And so those are some of the main highlights of what's going to happen.
And the president-elect has promised 100 million doses in 100 days. Do the experts think this is possible?
It's a very, very tall order, for a few reasons. The vaccine rollout has already gone slower than was expected, even by the Trump administration, which said that there would be 20 million vaccinations in December, when in fact, by the first week of January, there were just 7 million vaccinations. We still have only two authorized coronavirus vaccines, from Moderna and from Pfizer and BioNTech. So we're working with a still very limited supply going to very targeted people so far. And then there's also the confusion that has been caused with some of the federal rollout. So earlier today, we learned that the Trump administration had in fact stopped all of its reserves and sent all those out this week, or they're going to be sending them out. In some cases, they still are, but that now all of the reserves are gone. And so the Biden administration was planning on sort of boosting vaccination rates by getting those reserves out there. But I don't think people understood just how few doses were in reserves. It turns out it was just a few million, and now those are going to be used. So Biden has a few things to do. They've got to increase supply, both with the vaccine makers that are already authorized and with some that hopefully come online soon. They've got to increase confidence, and they've got to increase outreach and administration sites.
How much of what the president-elect wants to do can be done at the federal level, and how much would require state buy-in?
A lot of state buy-in is needed, and that's where some of the bumpiness of the rollout so far has been. State officials and local officials say that they're confused by everything from what doses they are getting and how many they're getting them and when they're getting them from the federal government, to questions about who are the best populations for certain doses. Like, for instance, when we learned that people with very serious allergies shouldn't be getting the Pfizer vaccine. Some of that can't be blamed on anyone. The Pfizer thing was going to only be found out by administering it in a large population. But other stuff is frustration between state and federal officials that's showing just how much the federal government expects states to take the lead with their own populations, with looking at what the needs are for their specific communities, and then looking at the best ways to administer those successfully for the people that they govern. And if you talk to state officials too, they agree that a lot of this is their responsibility. They don't really want the federal government to say to them, here is exactly how you're going to do things and who you're going to give this to, because you can't have, I spoke to one local health official in Philly who said, you can't have the same plan for us as states with, you know, massive reservations for American Indians. Those are different needs. So states do have to take a big chunk of the responsibility here.
And finally, we hear as well that the Biden administration wants to change the name of Operation Warp Speed. Did they give a reason? And is there a new name that's been proposed?
Well, the spokesperson who tweeted about it said that that was a Trump administration name for the Trump initiative. So I think that they want to signal with a new name that they're going to be doing administration and communications in a different way. There are plenty of theories out there about new names that kind of play off of warp speed. I joked light speed because of Star Wars, but we don't have the new name yet.
Sarah Overmall is a healthcare reporter with Politico. Read her work at politico.com. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Centers for Disease Control and Prevention warning today that that more contagious variant of COVID-19 that originated in the United Kingdom could be the predominant strain in the U.S. by March, and that it could threaten already strained healthcare resources. President-elect Joe Biden outlining Thursday night, we covered it live on the C-SPAN networks, a proposed $1.9 trillion coronavirus economic relief proposal, money for vaccines, aid to states, boosted unemployment assistance, another round of direct stimulus checks to Americans, and more. The U.S. House and Senate will be dealing with this soon, but the Senate also at the same time will likely be dealing with an impeachment trial for then-former President Donald Trump, stemming from the attack on the U.S. Capitol January 6th. Democratic Senator Chris Murphy asked about balancing the two. He was interviewed by CBS News chief Washington correspondent Major Garrett.
What will this Senate trial look like? When will it happen? Can you do a trial half the day in legislative business, the other half of the day? Do you set the trial off until you pass through reconciliation, I presume? The president-elect, soon to be President Biden's rescue plan for COVID? Sketch us out for that. If you sketch that out for us, if you can.
Yeah, I wish I could. Obviously, I'm not the incoming majority leader. Senator Schumer is going to have to make a lot of these decisions in consultation with Senator McConnell. Listen, I think it's pretty.
And the Democratic caucus, you'll have a voice. I mean, you.
No, I don't. I get some say in all of this. Here's my belief. My belief is that the priority has to be confirmation of Biden's cabinet and passage of a COVID relief package. Our vaccination distribution is in meltdown right now in Connecticut. We're not getting enough. We're not getting enough certainty on delivery. We don't have the resources to get it out. So we need to fix that ASAP. And so if there is a mechanism by which to either delay the trial or to be able to do it in parts, I would certainly support that because I think that confirmation and COVID relief legislation is more important right now than expediting the trial of a president who has already left office. Again, I think the rule of law from the very start has always prioritized speedy justice. So I'm not suggesting you put this off until the summer or the fall, but if we are going to move forward on a trial, let's make sure that it doesn't crowd out, getting the president's cabinet into place because we're in the middle of a domestic crisis.
Senator Christopher Murphy of Connecticut today with CBS correspondent Major Garrett, a program hosted by the Atlantic Council. Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi was asked again today when she might send over that article of impeachment to the Senate allowing the trial to begin. She said, you'll know when we do it. And on that $1.9 trillion coronavirus economic relief package proposed by President-elect Joe Biden, there's been some early pushback from the left and the right. Democratic Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez saying the $1,400 stimulus checks being proposed not enough, and that the argument that combining that with the $600 already approved equals $2,000. Well, she told the Washington Post $2,000 means $2,000. $2,000 does not mean $1,400. Republican Senator Marco Rubio tweeting Thursday night, President-elect Biden served in the Senate for over 35 years, so he knows the plan he outlined tonight cannot pass quickly and will delay the $2K for hard-hit Americans. On Wall Street today, the Dow is down 177, NASDAQ down 114, S&P down 27. Some new economic numbers. U.S. retail sales in December fell 0.7%, but industrial production rose 1.6%. And the IRS says tax filing season will not start until February 12th, giving the IRS more time to adjust to changes Congress made late last year in the tax code and the second round of coronavirus-related stimulus just passed. But this year, the tax filing deadline will be the usual April 15th. Last year, it was delayed 3 months due to the coronavirus pandemic. Finally, today in history, Wikipedia is 20 years old. It debuted on January 15th, 2001. C-SPAN interviewed one of the co-founders, Jimmy Wales, back in 2005, asking him why he created the website and what the name means.
Wikipedia is a freely licensed encyclopedia written by thousands of volunteers on the internet in over 100 languages, and it's one of the fastest growing websites.
Where'd you get the idea?
I had the idea basically from watching the growth of the free software movement. So all of the software that really runs the internet, GNU Linux, Apache, the web serving software, it's all written by volunteers collaboratively working together using free licenses. And it's really good quality stuff. And I realized in watching that that the principle of collaboration on the internet, which started with software, could be expanded to other types of areas.
What does Wikipedia stand for?
So the word, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. So wiki or wiki is a Hawaiian word meaning quick. So the idea of the wiki software is it's a website anyone can edit. It's really easy to get involved and get editing. And that that technology has actually been around since 1995. I didn't invent the idea of a wiki. I just invented a use for it. So Wikipedia. So wiki encyclopedia.
Wikipedia co-founder Jimmy Wales on C-SPAN's Q&A program in 2005. Today is the 20th anniversary of Wikipedia. An article at Axios notes that Wikipedia is among the top 15 sites on the internet. There are 55 million articles across 300 languages. Wikipedia is edited 350 times per minute and read more than 8,000 times per second. Well, thanks for joining us on Washington Today. Get the free C-SPAN radio app to listen on the move. And remember, this program can be had as a podcast. Find it wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe so you never miss one. Hope you have a good night and weekend.